I am very grateful to be with all of you this evening. Thank you. When we first met on the first evening of our gathering, we cited a beautiful prayer by Srila Narottam Das Thakur. It is a prayer of yearning in separation for the Lord's kindness and mercy. The more spiritually advanced we become, the more humble and soft our heart becomes. And the deeper these prayers become. A great soul on the path of bhakti does not think that I am great. A great soul appreciates Krishna's greatness and appreciates how the greatness of Krishna is manifesting through other devotees to show mercy upon oneself. And in the presence and awareness of such greatness, one becomes most humble. Logically, from a material perspective, it does not make sense. But from a spiritual perspective, it makes perfect sense. That those who are pure and sinless think themselves most sinful. Those who are in the highest platform of ecstatic spiritual realization feel themselves the lowest. And that connects them so deeply with Krishna that it brings them the greatest happiness. Narottam Das Thakur prayed that in order to understand Sri Sri Radha and Krishna's pastimes, one must follow in the footsteps of the six Goswamis. When Rupa and Sanatan Goswami first met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Ramkeli, that was their state. They repeatedly offered their prostrated obeisances in full surrender. They claimed that they were more fallen than Jagai and Madai. They said, Lord, you are Patita Pavana. You have come to deliver the most fallen. So to truly manifest this quality, all that is required is you deliver us. because we are so fallen. When Sanatan Goswami was speaking this way, Lord Chaitanya cried. He said, "Your humility is breaking my heart." And he embraced him. Thakur Narottam in this song is praying. Goranga bolite habe sudha habe mana kabe hamahere po sri Vrindavan. Goranga bolite habe pulaka sarira hari hari. What is it? Bolite nayane babeni. That when will that day come when upon chanting the name of Goranga, tears will fall from my eyes. And when I chant Hari Hari, my voice chokes with spiritual emotion. Vishaya chatiya khabe sudahabe mana khabe hamaheri bosri Vrindavan. And when will I cast once and for all far away all of my material desires, my selfish desires? Then, only then will I see Vrindavan. When we aspire to follow in the footsteps of these great souls, and we apply this spirit of devotion to our lives and everything we do, then our hearts actually become receptive to receive the mercy of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada explains the mercy of the Lord is like the sunshine. It is shining everywhere for everyone. But ye yatha mam prapadyante tam sthitai papachamyaham. As we open our hearts to receive it, we could actually access it. Maharaj Parikshit, he was the king of the world. There is no one like this anymore. People can be king of one little province or one country, but he was actually the emperor of the world. And he was such a great personality that he literally loved and protected everyone as his own children. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. Krishna is the proprietor of everything and everyone. And whatever influence we have, a devotee realizes that we are simply caretakers. Whatever intelligence, whatever ability to speak, whatever wealth, whatever type of family, occupation, political influence we have, we are just caretakers of God's children and God's property in Krishna's service. Because Parikshit was such a selfless servant of everyone, and he served with courage, with incredible power and conviction. He made laws, he enforced laws. As a Kshatriya, as a king, he was totally humble at heart, but that humility manifested in a very practical way, in the way that would best serve the Lord. Srila Prabhupada, in his humility, he could sometimes melt hearts with sweet, encouraging words, or with that same humility, he could roar like a lion to dispel misconceptions. But always in the spirit of the servant. Parikshit, due to a mistake he made, a foolish mistake, he was cursed to die in 7 days. Now, in today's world, people may curse you, but you really don't have much conviction about the potency of their curses. But in those days, Kali Yuga was just about to begin. A little boy cursed him. That's quite embarrassing. Could have been an ancient sage that was still around from previous yugas, but it was a little boy, Sringi, even his name. It's this little Sringi, he was a Brahmin, he was playing with his friends, and he found out that Parikshit Maharaj was thirsty, and his father was in samadhi and didn't welcome him properly, so Parikshit Maharaj, just somehow or other, due to thirst, it was Krishna's arrangement, ultimately. He put a dead snake around the yogi's neck. Now, if it was a live snake, that would have been a serious thing. In Kali Yuga today, that would have been a very nice gift. I see people have snake skin shoes and snake skin purses, and snake skins are very costly. But he just put this snake skin around him. And the little boy cursed him to die in 7 days. Now here is the king who had previously conquered Kali himself. The predominating power of the age of Kali was dressed like a powerful king, and his influence was to spread quarrel and hypocrisy through the entire world. He was torturing a cow and a bull, representing morality and dharma, and Mother Earth herself. And King Parikshit stood before him, and Kali, in total fear, surrendered. Kali did not even try to fight with Parikshit because he knew he was no match. And here is Parikshit Maharaj at the prime of his career being cursed by a little boy to die. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book that one's greatness has to be estimated by one's ability to tolerate provoking situations. You can never really understand who a great person is until they face provoking situations. Are they going to react according to their ego with anger or arrogance or fear? Are they going to turn to Krishna and respond with integrity? This is quite a provoking situation, to be cursed by a small boy to die in 7 days, knowing 100% for sure it will come true. He felt bad that I made a mistake. If this is what happens, I must deserve it. But when a great soul thinks that maybe I deserve whatever trouble I'm going through, it doesn't make them depressed. It inspires them to turn to Krishna for total shelter. And that's what Parikshit Maharaj did. What a welcome blessing this is. I know I have 7 days to give my entire body, mind, words, and life to Krishna. Now, anyone can talk about giving their lives in surrender to Krishna, but what does that actually mean? He wasn't just being theoretical. Krishna, I'm yours. Yes, he offered that prayer, but he offered it in a very practical, tangible way. Because to take shelter of Krishna means to take shelter of Krishna's devotees. Because in the devotees we find Krishna's shelter. He left behind all his wealth, all his material connections, and wearing very simple cloth, he went to the bank of the Ganga. How many of you have been to that place, Shukatal? Please raise your hands. It's not too far from here. How many have been to Haridwar and Rishikesh? Well, if you're driving from Delhi to Haridwar Rishikesh, just in the area of Meerut, if you turn right, not too far, there's a banyan tree on the bank of the Ganga. And that is the actual place where Parikshit Maharaj heard the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he went there. And all the great sages and rishis, he bowed to them and told him that he wanted to hear about Krishna. What is the purpose of life? What is the essence of all religion? What is the foremost duty of everyone? And what is the main duty of a person about to die? At that time, Shukadev Goswami came in to the assembly. And all these great, great sages from throughout the universe proclaimed him to be the most qualified to speak. Although he was just a teenager in physical years. He was so enthused by the sincerity of Parikshit's inquiries, that from his heart, Krishna manifested the Srimad Bhagavatam. So in the 10th canto, there is one place. According to the Acharyas, Parikshit Maharaj had about 3 days more to live. Because already 9 chapters and several, 9 cantos and several chapters into the 10th canto. And Parikshit Maharaj, he was so happy. He was showing us how to actually take shelter of Krishna. Through being in the association of devotees with deep enthusiasm to serve, to hear about Krishna, and to chant about Krishna. One of my godbrothers, who was a very early follower of Srila Prabhupada, he was having spiritual difficulty. And he wrote to Srila Prabhupada and explained. And Srila Prabhupada said, because you have once chanted Krishna's name sincerely in Vrindavan, Krishna is going to rectify everything and bring you back home, back to Godhead. So let's once more. Parikshit Maharaj told Sukadev Goswami that previously, when I was thirsty, I was in so much anxiety that I put that snake around Samikrishi. And he said, now, for over 4 days, I haven't had a drop of water or a morsel of food, but I'm not feeling the slightest bit anxiety. I'm not feeling at all thirsty or tired because I am drinking the nectar of the ever-flowing Ganga of your narrations about Krishna's life and teachings and pastimes. Shukadeva Goswami, he told how one day, not too long after Nanda Yashoda Mai, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mai brought Krishna from Mahaban to Vrindavan. They were living in this forest area. And Krishna and Balaram were very eager to take care of the calves. They were very small. And there were so many calves. Now, how many of you, mother and father, when your children are just a few years old, are going to give them the care of hundreds and thousands of calves and have them go out into the forest by themselves all day, every day? But Krishna and Balaram were very much insisting, we want to take care of the ham. We're very intelligent and we're very strong and we would like to do it. And ultimately, the intelligence of Vrindavan is simply what pleases Krishna and Balaram. So they took charge of the calves. when this story took place, they were about 5 years old. And one day, Krishna wanted to have breakfast with his friends in the forest near the bank of the Yamuna. So they were going to go out earlier than usual. So Krishna woke up early, just around the time of the sunrise. And his mother, Yashoda Mai, she bathed him. And she decorated him so nicely with oils and minerals and jewels and turbans and peacock feathers and everything like so nice. And then Krishna took his buffalo horn and blew it to call his friends. Krishna was so eager to personally reciprocate with his little cowherd boyfriends that he was calling each one of their names. In fact, Krishna, in his own inconceivable mystical way, could simultaneously stand at the doorway of every one of the gopas' houses. And he was not only calling their names, but he was singing beautiful poems about each of the cowherd boys. He was composing, right on the spot, composing poems about the qualities of the cowherd boy, about their relationship, about what they were going to do today. And each boy was so happy. Krishna's here for me. And he was blowing his buffalo horn just for me. And when the boys would come out, then Krishna went back to his house and collected his calves, and each of the boys came with all of their calves. There were so many calves. The word is asankhya. Asankhya is sometimes translated as unlimited. What does unlimited mean? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he wants to give us some visualization of what unlimited means. If you take the number one and put 17 zeros after it, that is asankhya. That's how many calves were with the boys. As Krishna was playing upon his flute, as they were dancing together, going into the pastures, and the calves were dancing, and the older gopis, when Krishna would play his flute, because of their motherly love, they were thinking that because Krishna's lips are tasting the sweetness of the milk from the body of Mother Yashoda, just hear how sweet his flute playing is. And how fortunate that flute is. That day was Balaram's birthday. So he was asked to stay back because on his birthday, Nanda, Yashoda, Rohini Devi, they would have him do yajnas and give charity and all of those things. From the way it's described in our scriptures and acharyas, it seemed like Balaram really just wanted to be with his friends. He wasn't so interested in all these formalities, but still he stayed back. And Krishna planned it that way so nicely. Krishna and all the gopas, they each and every one of them, there was limitless gopas and limitless calves. Each had their own stick. Each had prasad, a bag of prasad that their mother had prepared for them for the chirp. And they carried the prasad on their shoulders, and each had little flutes and little horns. And when they came into the forest, they all began to decorate themselves. Their mothers already decorated them with jewels and sandalwood and very nice garments. But the natural gifts of Vrindavan were the ornaments that they treasured the most. The very things that we just see wherever we look when we're in a forest, but they were seeing it in different light. The leaves, the minerals from the dirt. They were decorating their hair with leaves, and they were taking the minerals and taking and grinding them with rocks and smearing them over their bodies, and they were collecting feathers of birds and feathers of peacocks. They would even take fruits and decorate themselves with fruits. And each of them would look at Krishna and want to decorate Krishna. Now, when you have unlimited gopas, and each one personally wants to decorate Krishna with the leaves and the flowers and the minerals and the fruits and the feathers of Vrindavan, what to do? Krishna is Rasa Bihari. He is the supreme connoisseur and enjoyer of loving relationships. He's inconceivable and unlimited in every way. And in Vrindavan, his unlimited nature is especially in his limitless capacity to satisfy everyone's desire. So Krishna actually manifested himself so that every single one of the cowherd boys was just with Krishna alone. And every one of them was thinking that Krishna's only with me. Of all these limitless gopas, I get to be the one to decorate with Krishna. And no, out of all those gopas, no two gopas had the same way of decorating Krishna. Because everyone's individual. Everyone has their own personality, their own taste, their own artistic abilities. So each one was getting different types of minerals and different kinds of leaves and putting them in different ways and putting tilaks and putting so many lovely forest ornaments on Krishna. And Krishna was personally decorating each and every cowherd boy. And throughout the day, every time a cowherd boy looked at Krishna, each cowherd boy, even though Krishna was one person and they were many, each boy would see Krishna the way he decorated them. Now, this isn't due to some advanced computer technology. This is Krishna. This is Krishna's power to reciprocate with his devotees' desire to serve. Shukadev Goswami describes Krishna. He had beautiful complexion like a tamal tree. His eyes were like blooming lotus petals. His lovely, lovely, enchanting hair was curling around his moon-like face. His smiling lips, bright like the bimba fruit. He had a flute, a stick. In his belt, he had a buffalo horn. His cloth that he was wearing was golden, like lightning. Around his neck he wore a gunja mala. Gunja are simple sacred seeds that grow wild in Vrindavan. He had a beautiful Vajayanti mala, forest vana mala, a forest garland that extended below his knees, made out of so many of the natural forest flowers and leaves. He had a peacock feather in his hair. He had beautiful ornaments that Yashodamai put on and all the different natural ornaments of the forest. When they went out to take care of the cows, the calves, the cowherd boys, they really didn't have anything to do in that sense. Because the calves, they were so deeply attached to Krishna. However many there were, just with a single glance, they would never leave Krishna. And in Vrindavan, the pastures were so full with luscious, nutritious grasses. The calves were absolutely happy. And in this way, Vrinda Devi, Yogamaya, arranged it in such a way that the gopas could put their entire attention on playing with Krishna and playing with each other. At one time, Krishna went a little distance from all of them to a very scenic place. And he was looking out at the beauty of Vrindavan. Vrindavan is none different than Krishna. Vrindavan is the abode of Sri Radha, the pleasure potency of Krishna. Therefore, just as Krishna's beauty and sweetness is never the same, it's ever increasing. Similarly, Vrindavan on this spiritual platform is ever increasing. If you look at the same tree or the same view, you can never get tired of it because it's constantly in such a spiritually dynamic way for the pleasure of Krishna, becoming more and more and more beautiful with unlimited variety everywhere. As Krishna was looking out and Sri Vrindavan Dham was making herself so ever increasingly sweet for Krishna. And one of the gopas cried out, "I will be the first to touch Krishna," and ran to Krishna. And all the unlimited gopas, they all cried out, "I will be the first to touch Krishna." And everyone was running to Krishna. It's not that even Krishna has to expand himself in many forms. Krishna can do anything he likes. But each and every gopa thought that they were the first to touch Krishna. Not only did they touch him, they ran up and they touched and they embraced Krishna. And Krishna embraced each gopa. And everyone is thinking, Krishna's just letting me embrace. And many of the gopas started talking among themselves. "I was the first to touch Krishna." "No, I was the first to touch Krishna." And they said, "Krishna, who was the first to touch you?" Krishna said, "It doesn't matter, we are all together." Ultimately, whatever competition we may have to show our love for Krishna or to serve Krishna or to serve the great acharyas, they are most satisfied when we actually take satisfaction in being all together, appreciating each other's service. all the games and the playfulness of this world. As children like to play. The origin of that, in its perfection, is in the spiritual world. The difference between play in this world and play in the spiritual world is the play in this world, as innocent as it may be, never really satisfies the heart because we're trying to enjoy. But in the spiritual world, everyone's intent is to give Krishna enjoyment. And Krishna enjoys when we enjoy, so we will enjoy like anything because it will make Krishna happy. That is the Sakya Ras of Vrindavan. They would play their flutes, they would dance in the pastures and the forests, and they were very fond of imitating various animals. There would be bees, and they would hum like the bees. You're very lazy bees. They were very enthusiastic bees. Hari Hari. You are all being recorded, please. They would imitate the motions of the bees and the humming of the bees, and they would hear in the trees the cuckoos singing. Louder, please. You sound kind of like jackals, actually. They actually sang just like the cuckoos. And Krishna was doing everything his friends were doing. He was encouraging like anything. The gopas would say, Krishna, you sing like a cuckoo. And when Krishna sang like a cuckoo, his voice was millions of times more melodious and sweet than the cuckoo's. So much so that the cuckoo birds, they were extremely honored that Krishna was singing their song. But at the same time, they felt so embarrassed and so humble and so insignificant because Krishna was singing so much better than they could sing. But the beautiful thing is that made them so happy. They were embarrassed, and they started hiding behind the branches of the trees because they couldn't show their faces, because they were the cuckoos, and they couldn't sing near like Krishna. But that was their happiness. And the gopas, they were so playful with Krishna. They would say, Gopal, look at, you're singing so much like cuckoos, so much better than cuckoos, that now all the cuckoos are hiding in shame. You should not sing like cuckoos anymore. Why are you doing this to them? And Krishna would stop playing, singing like the cuckoos. And they turned to the swans. And they would make all the beautiful, graceful gestures of swans. And they saw ducks sitting by a lake.
And the gopas would sit just like the ducks, silently, not even moving. It doesn't say they made the sounds like the ducks, but they probably did. Ladies, you don't have to do it, please. Unless you're enthusiastic, please. And the peacocks. The peahen and the peacocks were dancing together for the pleasure of Krishna. And Krishna so expertly danced and moved just like a peacock. And oh, how the peacocks were so happy that Krishna was acknowledging them and appreciating them in such a way. They were filled in transcendental ecstasy, and all the boys began to transcendentally dance like the peacocks. And they would praise Krishna. "You are dancing so nicely like peacock." One boy saw a baby monkey on a tree and pulled the tail of the monkey. Now, if you do that, if you do that, the monkey will probably turn around and bite you. So please don't do that. But when Krishna was in Vrindavan, the little boys would pull the tail of the monkey, and the monkey was afraid and jumped to another branch, and the little boys wouldn't let go of their tails. They were just following right behind. Exactly with the same motions as the monkey, they were following the baby monkey and laughing and laughing and laughing, and the monkey was running. Others would sit next to a monkey, and the monkey would look at them and make a expression on their face like monkeys do. And the little cowherd boy would make the exact replica expression looking back at the monkey. Then the monkey would jump away and go from branch to branch to branch, and the gopas would jump from branch to branch, playing like the monkeys. And some of them saw little frogs. Who is this? Krishna, I think, is very pleased with you. I don't know what you do with your spare time. Undoubtedly took a lot of practice. But the frogs would jump, and the little boys would go right next to the frogs and jump with the frogs and jump with the frogs, and the frogs would get scared and jump into the water. And the little boys would jump in the water after the frogs. And when they would see the water, they would see the reflection of each other in the water. And they would start talking to the reflection and laugh. They'd start making all sorts of gestures to the reflection and say, "Look at this person, how strange he looks." And they'd go to a well, and they'd yell in the well, and there would be an echo. And they'd laugh. And sometimes they could kind of see a reflection in the well too. And they'd say, "Krishna, Krishna, There's somebody down there. And Krishna said, who are you? And an echo would come and say, who are you? And Krishna would say, I asked you. And then the echo would come out and say, I asked you. Krishna said, you are a fool. And then the echo would come out and say, you are a fool. Krishna would say, how dare you say that I'm a fool? And the echo would say, how dare you say that I'm a fool? Krishna would say, who are you? And the echo would say, who are you? And Krishna said, I am the son of Nanda Maharaj. And the echo would say, I am the son of Nanda Maharaj. Then Krishna said, you come out and I will give you a good beating. And the echo would say, you come and I will give you a good beating. And everyone would laugh. This is how the cowherd boys would spend their days. Sometimes they would play all games with little balls in the forms of the fruits from the trees. Sometimes one side of their teams would be the constables and others would be thieves. Sometimes they would play, Krishna would be, or others, the emperor and the others, the subjects. In this way, Shukadeva Goswami tells that the Parabrahman, that person who the Jnana Yogis worship as the unlimited, all-pervading Brahman, the supreme power within and beyond all of existence. That same personality who the yogis, they worship as Paramatma, the Lord within the heart of every living being, the witness, the knower of past, present, and future. And those who the devotees see as Bhagavan, the all-beautiful, all-merciful Lord of their hearts. The gopas, they just saw Krishna as their most loving friend. And Krishna reciprocated them with them as their friend. And how countless lifetimes of devotional service is required to attain the good fortune of the cowherd boys of Vrindavan. Srila Rupa Goswami tells us that somehow or other, just think of Krishna. This was the fortune of the Brijabasis. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that when the gopas and Gopal would play, their play was so intoxicating. It was so inconceivably, unlimitedly increasing each other's happiness at every moment, it was impossible for them to stop playing. But at the same time, it would be lunchtime. So, or breakfast time, whatever it was. So, by the Yogamaya potency, she would arrange one of Kamsa's demons to come just before lunch to stop the playing. And usually it was so incredibly exciting the way Krishna would liberate the different asuras, that it would make their appetite even more enthusiastic. Shukadeva Goswami explains, while they were playing like this, one asura named Aga entered Vrindavan. Aga means sin. This Aghasura was a very best friend of Kamsa in Mathura. He was the younger brother of Putana and Bakasura. We discussed Bakasura yesterday. You can imagine what kind of family influences he had. Because usually the younger children very much like to copy the older brothers and sisters. Putana and Baka. Not only was he in that family, but he was best friend and trained by Kamsa. Agasura was most cruel. Kamsa was so outraged with Krishna's behavior and so fearful for his own life, he sent Agasura. He killed your brother and sister. You go to Vrindavan and you kill him. Agasura hated Krishna. He wanted revenge. He was so wicked, so cruel, that killing Krishna was not enough for him. He had vowed that he would not only kill Krishna, he would kill every calf, every cowherd boy, every gopa, every gopi, every single resident of Vrindavan, he would murder. And he made a plan. He came into Vrindavan, an area that's today called Sapoli. And by his incredible mystic potency, he transformed his own form into that of a python, a massive serpent. But he planned it in such a way that he would devour all the gopas and their calves. This snake was 8 miles long. His idea was he would open his mouth like a massive cave, and he would look just like a wonderful place to explore and play for all the cowherd boys. And when they all went into his mouth along with Krishna, he would devour them. And without Krishna and the children and the calves, all the cows would die. And all the older gopas and gopis would definitely die in separation from Krishna and their children. This was serious mass genocide. His plot was to exterminate from the world the whole Brijabasi race, or community, let us say. So he laid down and he manifested this form and was completely motionless, just waiting. And he saw something that really disturbed him. He was watching and seeing how the cowherd boys, along with Krishna, were having so much fun together. This was churning his mind with ever-increasing hatred. He couldn't tolerate that Krishna and his friends were having fun. He was thinking, this is the killer of my sister, Putana. She was a very nice, beautiful lady. She didn't do anyone any harm. Krishna mercilessly killed her. And my brother, Baka, he was a great soul. And Krishna attacked him and killed him.
This is the way the false ego thinks. You see, the world is a mirror of our own consciousness. Sometimes people talk about being objective. To some extent, we could be objective. But actually, nobody could really be completely objective. Because we're all subjects. Yes? A living being is a subject, not an object. The very conscious force within us is not just an object, it's a subject. So how can a subject be objective? A subject is subjective. And in the spiritual world, everyone is seeing Krishna according to their particular ras, and everyone is seeing Krishna in a very unique way. Hanuman is seeing Ram according to his love and devotion. The gopas, each gopa is seeing Krishna according to their own unique love. And Krishna's revealing himself accordingly. Now in this material world, when we're envious, that envy colors everything we see. Srila Prabhupada gives the example, if you wear rose-colored glasses, everything is rose-colored. Everyone and everything. If you're wearing yellow-colored glasses, everything's going to be yellow. According to our consciousness, we see everything. If you see a flower, an artist is saying, oh, look at this flower, let me draw it and make a nice, beautiful painting. And he's seeing the flower in one way. If a man has some romantic attachment to a woman, he sees the flower and he says, oh, let me steal this flower and offer it to my beloved and put it on her hair and she'll be so happy, and he's seeing it on the hair of his beloved. If a person has hay fever or allergy, they see the flower and they just run away and start sneezing and their eyes start itching. It's, get that flower out of here. And a devotee sees the same flower and thinks, oh, just see Krishna's beauty in this flower. Let me collect it and let me offer it to Radha Shyam Sundar with love and devotion and put it in their garland. So no one is seeing it the same. So that's the way life is, and we have to understand this. Whenever Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that I only see faults in others because I am honeycombed with so many faults myself. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani gavihastini suni chaiva sopake cha pandita samadarsha. Krishna tells in Gita that one who is actually learned sees every living being as a child of Krishna. Sees Krishna in the heart of everyone. Sees the whole creation as an opportunity to serve Krishna. Shripad Ballabhacharya, this was one of his very strong teachings, is a devotee should see the whole universe as Krishna's playground and think, how can I utilize everything there is for Krishna's service? Sri Rupa Goswami explained this principle of Yukta Vairagya. Om Purnam Adha Purnamidam, to see everything in relation with Krishna. But if we have greed, everything and everyone we look at is going to be tainted by that greed. And when we have envy, the worst of all qualities, Krishna tells Arjuna, you can understand this message because you have no envy. This is significant. One could memorize every verse of the Bhagavad Gita and recite them 108 times a day in precise, eloquent Sanskrit, and be able to give a commentary that will mesmerize hundreds and thousands of people whenever you speak. But if there's envy in our heart, we can't actually understand a single word of it. Because understanding is not just an intellectual conceptualization. Actual understanding is the transformation of the heart that awakens our love, our devotion, realization. Agasura, he was vengeful to Krishna because Krishna killed his brother and sister. He was seeing only goodness in Baka and Putana and only evil in Krishna. And for him, there was nothing that disturbed him more than seeing Krishna and his friends having fun. It was unbearable. He wanted them to suffer. And when you want somebody to suffer, it's too painful to see them having fun. Do we all have that experience? You don't have to raise your hands or anything. But just in your own heart, you can ask that question. The problem is me. Even if somebody has faults, if I'm enjoying seeing those faults, if I get absorbed and get some sort of gratification in seeing those faults or speaking those faults, the disease is in me. The fault may be true, may not be true, but the disease is me. That actually I'm finding gratification in that. Aga was the symbol of sin. He was burning, burning with the desire to cause them suffering and death. And the more he saw them enjoying, the more frustrated he was becoming. The cowherd boys saw something they never saw before in the forest of Vrindavan. They saw this giant structure of some sort, and they began to speculate. What is this? Somebody said, look, one of the gopas said, it looks like such a wonderful playing place. It's a mountain. Look at, it's an incredible mountain that has been created in Vrindavan just so that we can have fun and enjoy with Krishna. And this mountain, it's extraordinary. They were all talking among each other as they were laughing. It kind of looks like a giant python. Yes, yes. The mountain looks like it has a lower mouth that's on the ground, and the higher mouth, the upper part, is in the clouds. And it looks like those structures that looks like massive white marble pillars, they look like a python's teeth. And that fishy smell that's coming out, it must be a massive cave. It is a massive cave, and it must have been a forest fire long ago, and some animals must have burned there because it smells like dead animals. And look at this wide highway. It looks like
the python's tongue, and it's red. Let's go inside and explore and play. Some of the boys, they looked at this and they saw these way up high, the eyes of Bakasura were bright red with anger, arrogance, envy, and greed. And they got scared. They said, "This is a python." And they started running away. And other boys said, "No, no, if you run away, we're not going to let you play with us anymore. You come back. It's not a python. It's just like this." And they, "Let's go." And as they were going further, they were speculating more and more. Maybe it is a python. And one of the boys said, "I think it is a python." And another boy smiled and said, "Even if it is a python, Krishna will save us. Just like Bakasura, he was big like this. And you saw how Krishna killed Bakasura. So let us go inside and play." And in this way, they were clapping their hands, dancing, running, into the mouth of Bakasura. And every boy and calf, just when they entered the gigantic cave-like mouth, they looked right at Krishna and smiled. Krishna was standing there. And our beloved acharyas tell, Krishna knew it was Bakasura. And he knew the intent of Bakasura. He wanted to stop them. But they were having so much fun speculating about what Bakasura was. I mean, not Bakasura, Agasura, I'm sorry. That Krishna couldn't interfere with their beautiful joking and laughing. And when he was just about to stop them, "No, no, you can't go in," they had already gone in. Krishna is the supreme controller of all controllers. But this is the nature of his love for his friends. He actually, according to Shukadeva Goswami, he actually, for a moment, by his own sweet will, by the power of his Lila Shakti, he felt bewildered. "What am I going to do now? They're all in his mouth." Now, usually when you kill somebody, if somebody's inside that person you're killing, it's very dangerous. So how to rescue them when they're inside the mouth? If my friends went in, then I must go in also. Agasura kept his mouth open. He was just waiting for Krishna, the killer of Baka and Putana. And after all the other friends and calves were inside, Krishna entered. When Krishna entered, the demigods who were watching from the clouds, they were so afraid of Agasura. They began crying, "Alas, alas." When he was outside, they were thinking, maybe he'll rip open the mouth of Aga like he did Baka, but now he's inside. So the demigods were very, very alarmed. And Kamsa had his spies and reported to Kamsa, and they were celebrating. They were convinced that the Brijarabasi race was exterminated. Now, acharyas give us a lesson from this also. Aga means sin. And there is a metaphor that we can learn from this, or an analogy, that the cowherd boys were Krishna's devotees. They were Krishna's associates. But sometimes even devotees of the Lord, who associate with the Lord by worshiping the deity, by rendering devotional service, by chanting the holy names, sometimes they have a tendency to run toward sinful activities. Because, like Aga, although those sinful activities, their purpose is to cause our ruination, to cause our suffering, to kill us spiritually, still, it appears to us in an illusion state as something that will bring us enjoyment. Sinful activities appear to be places where we can enjoy. That is why Srila Prabhupada explained it is so important to have very, very quality association with devotees and to very seriously perform our sadhana, especially the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. There's one purport where Srila Prabhupada says if one doesn't attentively chant 16 rounds each day, at any moment that person could become a victim of Maya. And Maya makes us victims, like Agasura, promising all sorts of happiness. But if we're hearing Hari Katha, by reading Srila Prabhupada's books, by hearing the classes of sincere devotees, it reminds us, it fills our hearts with Krishna. So we must be very careful. So when they were all inside Agha's mouth and Krishna followed, then Agasura was determined to crush them all. Due to the poison and the lack of proper oxygen or anything in there, all the gopas and the calves had dropped dead. They were lifeless. And it was dark. And pythons are very expert. Not only do they like to chew you with their teeth to get you inside, but once you're inside, they have a certain mystical power that only they have, where inside the muscles within their bodies can crush you. A python can eat a deer and just crush it and pulverize the bones and liquefy the whole body and digest it. That is python. So that was his plan. And he just began the process. And Krishna, you see, in all the other asuras that Krishna killed in Vrindavan, he never changed his form. He was always just like a little boy because he didn't want to disturb the rasa of his devotees, the love, the affection. When he was Putana, when he killed Putana, he was just a tiny little baby. And even though Putana grew and grew and grew and grew, Krishna just remained the same little size of a little baby and just kept sucking her breast and sucked her life out. And when all the Brijabasis saw this, he's just our little baby. It must be due to our pious activities, or because we planted banyan trees or dug lakes, that Lord Vishnu has protected our beloved little Krishna. Trinavarta, when he took Krishna way, 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 way high up in the sky, Krishna didn't become big like a mountain. He remained a little tiny baby, the same size, but he assumed the weight of a mountain to come him crashing down. So in all of the asuras that were killed by Krishna or liberated by Krishna in Vrindavan, he always maintained his same little cowherd boy form. Vamanadev, when he wanted to fulfill his purpose, he expanded into a form where with two steps he covered the universe. Varahadev, when he wanted to save the earth, he assumed such a form that the whole earth planet could rest between his tusks. Narasingadev, how he appeared. He appeared to be covering all directions. But Krishna was killing asuras even worse than these as a little baby. But now, no one could see him, so he could do anything he want, because he was inside the serpent. The demigods couldn't see him. The Vrijavasis couldn't see him. All his friends were dead. So he assumed a huge form. He began to expand himself to completely block all the passage of air within Agasura. And Agasura, with his mystic potencies, he expanded himself. And he was getting bigger and bigger, but no matter how much he expanded, Krishna was expanding even bigger so that he couldn't breathe. Agasura was struggling. He was suffering. His whole body was shaking, 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 shaking. Somehow or other trying to either crush Krishna or expand bigger than Krishna. And Krishna kept getting bigger, 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 bigger until there was no possibility of any. He couldn't exhale any air. And finally, the air had to go somewhere. And his life force burst from the top of his head and went into the sky in the form of a light. And he was dead. Krishna, whose glance is the source of all life, all nectar. The plenary portion of an expansion of Krishna. Krishna expands as Balaramji. Balaramji expands as the Chaturvyuha of Aniruddha, Pradyumna, Vasudev, and Shankarshan. That Shankarshan expands as Narayan. Narayan expands as a secondary Chaturvyuha. That Shankarshan expands as Karunodakshayi Vishnu. Expansion of Krishna. And that Mahavishnu, with his glance, by one moment of a glance upon the Mahatattva, or the potential material energy that he creates, he impregnates it with all living beings. With his glance, he activates the three modes of material nature through time to actually begin the whole creation of all the universes. That is the power of the Lord's glance. Krishna glanced upon all of his friends and all the little calves and brought them back to life in such a way that they never even knew what happened. They didn't know that they were dead. They didn't even know that they fell asleep. They just came to consciousness. And they all saw Krishna glancing at them and just continued their clapping and playing and laughing and joking.
And they all came out of Agasura's mouth. And after all of the gopas were in the pastures of Vrindavan again, then Krishna came out. And as soon as he came out, the devas were all watching this. Something incredible. His Atma, his eternal soul, was just hovering in the sky as a bright light. And it soared and entered into the body of Krishna. And they understood he had attained Sarupya Mukti. That means the liberation of being an eternal associate as a loving devotee of the Lord in Vaikuntha, in the spiritual world. This was astounding. He was so cruel, so sinful, so envious, so vengeful. How is it possible? A person who wanted to not only kill Krishna, but his whole family and all of his friends and everyone, the devotees. Krishna gave him eternal residence in his abode. Liberation. You see, Agasura, he actually gave pleasure to the gopas. They actually really enjoyed looking at him, and they were laughing and clapping and dancing going into his mouth. And because of their association, it is explained that for a moment, for a single moment, due to all the immense enjoyment of the gopas going into his mouth, that satsang with the devotees, for a moment, he found pleasure in their happiness. And Krishna saw that one little speck of goodness. And because Krishna was inside of him, and he was totally remembering Krishna, at the time when he gave up his life, he was Krishna conscious. And he gave pleasure to the gopas. Therefore, he was completely purified. Yegatamam prapadyante tam sthataiva bhajamya. That because he allowed Krishna to come inside of him, Krishna allowed his soul to come inside of Krishna. Reciprocation. And this was astounding. When the demigods saw this, they were showering flowers upon Krishna and playing so many beautiful instruments, and the Gandharvas were singing and the Apsaras were dancing, and so many wonderful, wonderful celebrations and festivities were going on because Agasura had been killed. At that time, Lord Brahma, he came down to see what happened. It was astounding. How Krishna was able to liberate Agasura was astounding. But the most astounding thing is how Krishna gave him, like his sister Putana, eternal loving service in the spiritual world.
That is Krishna.
The other avatars of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when they liberate asuras, they usually liberate them by giving them a place in the Brahma Jyoti, mukti.
But Krishna has given, he has given some of them entrance into his own pastimes.
Afterward, the boys were really hungry. They all went to the bank of the Yamuna to take their prasad. And Krishna was sitting among them. And oh, how he was praising the beauty of the Yamuna River and the Kalpa Vriksha trees of Braj Bhumi. And all the boys took out their little packets of prasad, and they all made so many different kinds of plates. Some were using flowers as plates, some were using rocks as plates, some were using leaves. And they were all joking and showing each other their prasad. And Lord Brahma was watching. And he was mystified. A little gopa would eat something and it would taste so good. His mother made it for him. It tasted so good. He'd say, "Krishna, you have to taste this." And he'd take it out of his mouth and Krishna would eagerly eat it. This was even more astounding for Lord Brahma. After he kills Agasura, Yajna Purusha, Yajna Bhuk, the greatest Brahmins and the demigods with chanting beautiful Vedic hymns from the Samaveda, the Rig Veda, they're offering oblations to the Almighty Vishnu. And this is the Almighty Vishnu? He's joking and playing in the forest with all these little cowherd boys and he's eating the food right out of their mouths? Brahma wanted to test Krishna. Shukadeva Goswami explains, after the killing of Agasura, the gopas, they all, at the end of the day, they returned to the village of Braj. And on their way back, something very extraordinary. On their way back, they saw Agasura's body. It was dried up. And from that day on, Agasura's body was a favorite playground for the gopas. All the same mystery and experience when he was actually a python was still there, except now he was dried up and there was nobody inside. So it was one of their favorite places to play hide-and-go-seek and to go in and start doing kirtans and hearing echoes, incredible acoustics inside of his mouth. Agasura, not only did he go back home, back to Godhead, but his body was even there for the pleasure of Krishna and his friends. After that, that is the power of Krishna, association of Krishna. So, we have some aga or sinful tendencies, I think. But when we chant the name of Krishna, Krishna's in our mouth. When we chant the holy names with feeling, Krishna's in our heart. And we become purified. Srila Prabhupada explains, Oma pavitra pavitrova sarvavastam gatopiva yasmaret pundarikaksam sabhayabhyantara suchi. That whether you are pure or impure, even if you're Agasura, By associating with the all supremely pure Krishna, Pavitra, we become purified. Srila Prabhupada gives a simple analogy. If you put an iron rod in fire, it becomes red and hot like fire. And Prabhupada said, if you don't believe it, you touch it. It will burn just like fire. That's the power of association. If we associate with very materialistic, selfish, egoistic people, people who love to find faults with others, then undoubtedly those qualities will influence us. But if we associate with pure-hearted devotees who are honestly and sincerely trying to serve Krishna, then we become purified. And Krishna is the supreme pure. Kali Kale Namarupe Krishna Avatar. And he has descended within the sound vibration of his holy name. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that just by associating with Krishna's name purely, sincerely, the name of Krishna will reveal his form, his qualities, his pastimes, his abode, his devotees, will reveal our own eternal relationship with Krishna. This is the power of associating with Krishna within our own hearts and within our own mouths as we cry out his holy name. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that we should take the string of the holy name and wear a particular verse on that string of the holy name and keep it over our heart always. Trinadapi sunichena tador iba sihishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sada. This is our aspiration. Not to have great positions or facilities, but to be humble like a blade of grass. In fact, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells, more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, eager to offer all respect for others without any false prestige ourselves, not demanding or expecting respect for ourselves. When we could chant in that state of mind, Rupa Goswami tells us what the experience will be. I do not know how much nectar the two syllables Krishna have produced. When the name of Krishna stands on my, or dances on my tongue, I desire many, many, many tongues. And when the sound vibration enters my ears, I desire millions and millions of ears to drink that nectar. And when the holy name enters into the courtyard of my heart, my life is conquered. My senses become inert. Srimad Bhagavatam explains, if we chant Krishna's name and tears are not falling from our eyes and we're not feeling transcendental ecstasy, then it can be understood that we must have steel-framed hearts. But Krishna's name can melt those steel frames hearts. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya asked Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of the 9 processes of bhakti, which is most important? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, kirtanam. Nam namakari bahuda nija sarva shaktis. All the powers of Krishna are within the name. It is the prime benediction for all humanity. Golokera premadana harinam sankirtan. As Krishna descended here in Sri Braj Bhumi Vrindavan 5,000 years ago, and as he is in his aprakata lila, performing his lila here eternally, Krishna descends from Goloka Vrindavan in the form of the holy names. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he told Haridas Thakur and Nityananda Prabhu, go to everyone you see without discrimination and only beg this one charity. Chant the holy names of the Lord. On his journey to Vrindavan, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Jarikanda forest, he transformed the hearts of tigers and deers into loving brothers and sisters by transforming their hearts through the chanting of Krishna's holy names. Krishna's presence in Akasura gave him supreme liberation. And whatever we may have done, if we just follow the path that Srila Prabhupada and the great acharyas have given us of how to live in a spirit of devotion, if we take Krishna's names, we will also become purified and return back home, back to Godhead. Sukadeva Goswami told Parikshit Maharaj that when this pastime took place, the gopas were in their Komara Lila. That means from birth till 5 years old. And when they went back to the village and explained it to all the Brijavasis, the elder gopas and gopis, they were in their Poganda age. Parikshit Maharaj was very inquisitive. How is it possible? How is it possible in the same day and then? It's according to your explanation, in the same day, it's a year later. Shukadeva Goswami was so enlivened that Parikshit Maharaj was listening so attentively and asked this question. And Shukadeva Goswami went into transcendental ecstasy, because he was remembering in his own heart the incredible pastime that took place that same day. He became speechless. But Narada Muni and Vyasadeva and Vishwamitra and everybody had to kind of, you know, because time was running out for Parikshit. Sukadeva Goswami explains, one of the most beautiful pastimes. And we will discuss this tomorrow. Akasura represents cruelty, envy. One of the great obstacles on the path of bhakti, where we actually take pleasure
in seeing the misfortune of others. A true devotee is Satagrahi, one who seeks the essence. And naturally, their quality is Paradukaduki. The pleasure of another is my pleasure. The good fortune of another is my good fortune. And the suffering of another is mine. So let us, together, we need each other to inspire each other, to be examples for each other, to cry out Krishna's name with great feeling. We will have a few minutes of kirtan now, and then our Yadubar Prabhu is going to show us a wonderful short film. I'm going to say something about it now. Would you like to show it after the kirtan, before Damodarastra? I think it's better that time. This film, of course, we know who Yadubar Prabhu is. Can you please come on stage? Vishakha Devi, will you please come? Yeah.